This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com in the unbelievably hot climes of Western Japan.
This is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com in the moderate summer climes of Portland, Oregon, and we both give you a hearty welcome back to The New World Next Week, our weekly video series where we break down what's really going down in the news in the world of alternative news and open source intelligence. We're going to go around the kingdom, if you will, this week and start out on MediaMonarchy.com for an article from the Financial Times of London. Americans renounce citizenship to avoid the IRS. At the U.S. Embassy in London, there's a waiting list that none of the officials like to discuss. On the list are Americans hoping to give up their citizenship as they seek shelter from the Internal Revenue Service. One lawyer fighting for her client's rights to do so, Suzanne Reisman, former civil rights campaigner who's now a private client lawyer in Mayfair, central London. You make a lot of sacrifices when you have to pay U.S. taxes and live outside the country for a long time, but you also make a lot of sacrifices when you give up your passport. Having lived in London since 98, Reisman herself has considered giving up her U.S. passport, but she probably won't. I don't think I want to die in the U.K., she says. And if we jump down this article, the backlog at the U.S. Embassy, where no appointments are available until February, stems from a rise in the number of American expatriates living in the U.K. who have been seeking to escape paying U.S. tax on their worldwide income and capital gains since the simplification of U.S. tax laws in 2008. Now, this story has a flashback at the bottom of this post to a story from the New York Times just this past April. More American expatriates give up citizenship, and it's basically the same story. What I find interesting about this one, James, is that it comes from the Financial Times, which, as we've, I think, discussed, can be essentially a mouthpiece to and from the elites. It's by them and for them, if you will. So this story, when you think about it, isn't about folks like you and I renouncing our citizenship. This is about people who perhaps are multi-millionaires with massive assets and wealth who perhaps, like Ned Beatty at Network says, oh, no allegiance, you know, there are no countries, there are no nations, there's only BP and Shell and, in this case, now Google and what have you. So, James, I'd like your take on that as well, being a Canadian citizen living in Japan.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'm certainly not a multimillionaire or anything like that, but yes, I'm a Canadian citizen here in Japan, so I do have to pay taxes in Canada, and it is, you know, it's a significant amount of money, even just the small amount that I have to pay on my paltry salary, but it is something that's very difficult for a lot of people here, and I know a lot of Americans here who have a lot of dealings and headaches with the IRS and things like that, so... It's very difficult for the average person to escape, and I think the average person probably isn't willing to renounce their citizenship just to evade taxes or whatever, so it can be quite a headache, but I think you're right, definitely, when you have millions of dollars at stake, I guess there is more interest in doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no way to escape the clutches of the IRS or the, you know, tax services.
I wonder if this also speaks to maybe seeing some, you know, rats jump the ship, as essentially we know they wanted to perform a controlled demolition on, you know, world economies, but now you even have elites saying that maybe it's gotten out of their hands. I don't want to paint all the folks with a broad brush about people who are thinking about renouncing their citizenship and calling them bankster corporate scum by any stretch, but I think this is what we're trying to look at, and this is what we're trying to get into with these stories, is see how they extrapolate out to the larger story.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And it is—it's just another sign that obviously, as the economy collapses, the tax services are going to try to reach further and harder and scrape more and more pennies out of everyone's pockets. So, as they attempt to shake it out of our pockets, I guess there are people who will eventually go to quite big extremes just to get rid of the IRS or whoever is hounding them.
Well, and then, yeah, you just now remind me of things like debtor prisons coming back and all those sorts of things. But we don't have time to get into all that here. Let's move now to our second story, and this one's on cyberspacewar.com. And this comes originally by way of Defense News, but thanks, of course, to the fine work at cryptogon.com, tax-funded Pentagon software ends up being owned by corporations. Now, the Defense News article is titled, Pentagon is losing the soft war, software, with a little parenthesis. But reading from, the Department of Defense spends tens of billions of dollars annually creating software that is rarely reused and difficult to adapt to new threats. Instead, much of this software is allowed to become the property of defense companies, resulting in DoD repeatedly funding the same solutions or, worse, repaying to use previously created software. The lack of a coherent set of policies and regulations for the DoD's intellectual property has eroded the U.S. military competitive advantage. Yada, yada, the Defense News article goes on. Let's get to the last pertinent point on this. The Byzantine rules governing the military's intellectual property portfolio use an antiquated right structure where the contractor always retains copyright and therefore effective monopoly control over taxpayer-funded software ideas. By contrast, commercial industry ruthlessly exercises control over its own software ideas. James, what's your take on this?
Well, is this really that much of a surprise, and is it really that much, isn't this obviously something that's built into the system so that it basically becomes a way to fund corporations through the government? I mean, this is the type of thing we see in so many different aspects of the government that why would we expect anything else from the Department of Defense?
And it's that revolving door. I suppose now this has a new sort of 21st century, technological overlay. An interesting article to add along with this comes from Danger Room. CIA software developer goes open source instead, and they reference this recent article from Defense News, and they go into all sorts of things, even like the late, great future combat systems, which we know has been a big crushing failure. James?
Right. Well, I guess you could understand why certain agencies would want proprietary software rather than open source, but I don't know, it's just another sign of the military / industrial / technological complex, and it's just eating up more and more of the tax dollars that supposedly go to fund government agencies, but actually just go to pay off the interests on the national debt.
And, we could even tie in things like the P-TECH story and some of the software that runs on our, supposedly confidential military networks. And of course, all that we've touched on recently with WikiLeaks and all those developments there and Project Vigilant and all those sorts of things are there. And again, folks, we hope you will go to the sites and go to the stories and dig through them and read these things for yourself.
And please Google P-TECH 9/11.
So, James, finally, we'll jump to my third site, foodworldorder.com, for a story from news9.com out of Oklahoma. EPA to crack down on farm dust. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is considering a crackdown on farm dust. So senators have already signed a letter addressing their concerns on the possible regulations. We have the PDF download link for you. The letter that's dated July 23rd to the EPA states, quote, if approved, this measure would establish the most stringent and unparalleled regulation of dust in our nation's history. We respect efforts for a clean and healthy environment, but not at the expense of common sense. These identified levels will be extremely burdensome for farmers and livestock producers to attain. Whether it's livestock kicking up dust, soybeans being combined on a dry day in the fall, or driving a car down the gravel road, dust is a naturally occurring event. Many in the Oklahoma farming industry are opposed to the EPA's consideration. One farmer said the possible regulations are ridiculous. It's plain common sense. We don't want to do anything detrimental, said farmer Curtis Roberts. If the dust is detrimental to us, it's going to be to everybody. We're not going to do anything to hurt ourselves or our farm. Now, James, speaking of the dust from a truck driving down the road, makes me think of the story of Monsanto seeds and spores flying into other farmers and then them being sued and copyright infringement. This is a dour note, and we have had really bad news, unfortunately, on the farm front on foodworldorder.com that we've hit in the last couple of weeks and months here. But we can go out on a high note. But what's your take on the farm dust?
If the EPA and government agencies like that were actually actively trying to piss off more of the public, I mean, could they do a better job? Mm-hmm. I mean, this—it's just—it's so
America
stupid. It's so ridiculous.
And it's precisely the kind of folks who generally, unfortunately, will kind of go along with the garbage that, you know, Washington will push. But again, we're seeing, I think, a lot of interesting developments. May you live in interesting times, as the curse or blessing may say. But I mentioned we can go out on a high note. We'll take one from the Boston Globe, also posted on foodworldorder.com. Farming surges in Massachusetts with new crop of devotees. After decades of decline, farming is resurging across the state. New farmers are graduates fresh out of college, immigrants with farming backgrounds, former professionals starting second careers, those looking to make a new living from tilling the soil at training programs run by the state, universities, or nonprofit organizations. This is also going on. We have another story that Salt Lake County is talking about creating urban farms. And ultimately, this is going to be the move that is going to have to take place, James.
Absolutely. We have to take food production back into our own hands. Absolutely. All right. James M. Pilato, MediaMonarchy.com. Thanks again.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.